Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Robots and Red Tape. As always, I am your host, Nick Shutt. Happy to have my friend Tom with me here today. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. How you doing there, Nick?
Oh man, it's another day in paradise. Thanks so much for asking. I really appreciate you taking the time to hop on and chat today. For the folks that don't know you, your background and your company, can you give folks a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got here, man, and what you're working on?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So my background is primarily in large enterprise IT. So I worked in sales and product specialist roles at Cisco, Oracle, IBM, HPE, both on the commercial sector and government. And I started getting involved in contributing to education and doing volunteering. I've got my Loudoun County marching captain's pit crew shirt on there. So out on the field in all kinds of weather and supporting the kids with the band and all the stuff. My daughter was in the band playing trumpet there. And yeah, just got involved in AI soon after ChatGPT launched at the end of 22 and started building open source software and private AI systems in early 23. So then here we are. So, yeah.
And man, that's fantastic. So, now are you essentially like reselling a product and other people's products, or did you guys build your own and build your own platform?
No, we pretty much built our own platform. So yeah, we have a combination of a software stack that we partnered with Bionic GPT on. There's some guys that are coming out of Europe. We've been co-developing with them very closely for the last 18 months. And then we have our own private data center architecture that we've built out and compute networking and storage. And so we primarily deploy all our software in our own data center so we can ensure data privacy control there for our customers. So yeah.
Yeah, no, man, absolutely. And I know you mentioned schools. Are you deployed in, do you, I know you, that's one of your verticals. You can tell folks a little bit about the other areas and then go, tell us more about the schools and why you decided to, essentially work to bring, local private AI into schools.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So basically, the baseline value proposition of the platform is full data privacy, i.e., all of the user prompts, all the data sets, all the information there about the users is all stays within each individual customer's database or their instance. And so that's the baseline. And then we have three primary use case segments, shall we say, that we focus on. So it's absolutely schools, colleges, education type use cases. It's cybersecurity, so for cybersecurity companies that want to use AI tools, but they need, data privacy. And then there are defense contractors. So we have defense contractors that need a specific type of security certifications that we have on our platform so they can use AI. But again, if we switch gears and come back to the schools have similar requirements, right? They're FERPA here in the US. They have absolute needs for data privacy control. They need to have observability and monitoring in place in case something goes wrong, there's harmful content, biased content, things like that. So they have arguably the same level of oversight that's needed on AI as, large enterprises or even, defense contractors. So,
Yeah,
platform and all that stuff.
absolutely. No, I appreciate that. With my background in the defense space, I know how much fun compliance is. Just in general, especially with all those wonderful different, word salad or letter salad, letter soups that are the acronyms of whether it's ISO, CMMC, go on and on and on and on. So appreciate that. And then speaking about schools specifically, love to, I'm personally, Tom, of the opinion, and this is just my personal opinion, that our education system has been antiquated for like 50 years. And I think that our method of teaching children, where it's, regurgitating information, is not necessarily, in an age where you can look anything up, is not necessarily the most useful thing to teach. But I also know teachers are way overloaded with work, have a lot going on during the day, then they go home and they have to do lesson planning and grading papers and grading homework and all that. So can you tell folks a little bit about your platform within schools and what it's doing to, help students and help teachers learn more effectively and teach more effectively?
That's a there's a lot to unpack there. So, there's lots to
Mm-hmm.
unpack. So I think if we just sort of go to the start of this whole conversation, right? So I think traditionally, education has been there to function to give people knowledge and an understanding of certain subject areas, right? So you start with your primary and high school, you develop a baseline level of knowledge and capability, English, math, science, and what have you. Then you go to college, get secondary education or a higher ed, and then you typically will go into the workforce. And then it used to be expected that you would spend a little time. You might spend 1 or 2 years shadowing a senior, more experienced person and having knowledge transferred by kind of osmosis, if you will, or learning on the job. Or you might go to a structured training environment like the military. I mean, I went into the military when I was 17, right? I enjoyed having part of the, I was an enlisted avionics mechanic, and so I enjoyed having partly of the hands-on plus the schoolwork. For me, for my learning modality, that worked well. I was not the one to be just all theoretical or just scholastic and that sort of thing. So my parents actually helped me make that decision early in my life. When I was a young teenager, I did some internships. So my father was very instrumental in helping me with that, right? Internships, getting a little bit of experience like that, very, very helpful in forming the sort of conclusion that we came to and said, hey, it would be a good idea for you to do something that has a combination of experiential learning and theoretical, right? And so if you think about all of that, traditionally education was intended to prepare people for the workforce, and they had a couple of different paths to get there. And then so fast forward now to where we are with AI, and people now talk about knowledge being really more of a commodity now, right, to your point. It started with Google searching and such like, so you could search the internet for information. However, it wasn't always presented to you with context, right? So you could do a search for things on Google, then you would get presented with a whole bunch of things, and you would still have to poke around and figure out what made sense for your situation or your use case. So then along comes AI, and it's now much more of a natural language way to interact with knowledge and information, which is much more, I don't know what the word is, maybe intuitive or easier to leverage into the context of solving a problem, as compared
Digestible.
to,
Is digestible the word you were looking for? It's like a more digestible way to answer
digestible,
the
digestible or actionable, you
question.
know? So yeah.
Sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, so I would say again, now that we have sort of the way it was, we transitioned to starting to have pocket calculators and then the internet and Google searches and online research and all that stuff. And then, along comes, ChatGPT, and they did a great job. They made AI accessible to everybody by way of a natural language interface to AI. And then, of course, they've made it very easy for people to start using it. And then what started happening, because again, I've been coaching cybersecurity and cybersecurity club at local high school, at Briarwoods High School here in Loudoun County, for about 3 years now. So I saw this thing start right at the end of 22, and I immediately started to look at this going, oh my gosh, this thing is very, very powerful. But again, nobody really knew how to use it properly. And so what's transpired in the last, 2 or so years really is that you've had a lot of the what I call the copy and paste phenomenon going on, right? It's like kids have become very good at using AI to create their essays. They're using AI to actually grade their own essays. It's kind of quite creative, really. I hear this from teachers, right? They say, well, the kids are very creative at creating the content. They copy and paste it. They figure out how to slightly modify it so it's not very detectable by these AI tools that detect, AI generated content. They grade their own papers and dial it in and such like, and they will submit it. And then the teachers, unfortunately, don't have anything else to fall back on. They just don't, because the education system still functionally works to assess primarily the ability to retain and present knowledge. And so that's where the crux of this whole thing lies, is that in the age of knowledge becoming a commodity, those system two level thinking processes, critical thinking, problem solving skills are the things that need to be developed. And the education system needs to be adjusted or revised to emphasize those types of skills. So
Yeah, no, absolutely it does. And I also think those are the ones that are harder to teach. It's a lot easier to get somebody to like memorize when the War of 1812 was, than it is to get somebody to critically think about a problem and propose solutions, right?
Well, I don't know if I completely agree with that. Fortunately, I don't think I completely agree with that. I think that, especially as you start at a slightly younger age, like maybe middle school, we run a lot of cybersecurity capture the flag competitions. We've done that with kids in middle school and high school, and also adult practitioners. But we generally find that people, when you encourage the exploration, curiosity, the maybe a slightly competitive element where they're competing in an area of subjects, it does tend to sort of spark a different type of thought process. And so the answer is, I think you can cultivate those skills. And it doesn't necessarily take that long either. I have a few examples of that I can talk about as well. So.
Okay, absolutely. No, love to hear more about that. And so how, yeah, I why would a school be more interested in you guys and your product as opposed to just enabling access to like a Gemini or a ChatGPT on site at on school computers, and how is that different? And also, in addition to how is it different, how do you think adoption is going in school systems?
Okay. Yeah. So let's have a think about that. So, So I would say that what I would call the mainstream AI services, like the ChatGPT and the Copilot and all that sort of thing, there are data privacy concerns with that, and so they do store information. And so what happens is that you are now crossing a compliance boundary. You now have to have your security policy and your governance policy and all that sort of thing needs to take that into account, and that involves some complexity and some risk. Oftentimes, school IT people are not really very familiar with those things, and they need and the thing then is that school leadership has to make a decision. Hey, do we want to actually do all this now and run the risk of potentially personal information getting leaked, or there not being effective oversight over how these people are using the tools, and we may not be able to even see what they're doing if we have a legal hold or we have to do an audit. If we don't have the tools set up to even do all of that, we're not going to be able to do it. And so, in the worst case sort of scenario where there's some sort of harm that takes place, some sort of harmful situation that takes place, if you can't do an audit, if you're having to deal with a very difficult situation, that becomes very problematic for a school. And so, basically, what happens is the only way they can manage that risk is by saying, we can't do it. We just cannot afford to take that risk. And so that's where we came in and said, well, the way we've designed our platform, it's there to be to fully contain all the user data, all the prompts, all the responses, all the documents and data sets and files that are used in it are all in a self-contained bubble. It's a completely closed private system, and nothing is stored outside of the software instance we deploy for the school. So for starters, the school loves that because they say, hey, number one, we can get our arms around this. We know that all our data is in at least one place, and we know that we can audit Tom's platform because they can audit our platform, and they have an audit trail. They can see exactly what's been happening every second of the day with everybody. And so because all that's in the database, you can now connect that to all your observability tools. So we have out-of-the-box observability tools we can provide as part of the service, or we can have their observability tools and their security platforms connect in directly and pull the data out of our database instance for that customer. So it's a whole different paradigm. The way we've designed and deployed this thing is much more just like a typical enterprise software deployment model, where all of these things are just considered table stakes. This is all table stakes stuff. So that's kind of the foundation, if you will.
Yeah, man. No, that's fantastic. So you guys are while obviously while the commercially available tools are fantastic for certain things, in environments where there is a lot of compliance, like a school system, that's it just doesn't work because where the data go, we have no idea where that data goes. You also, I don't know if school, like I know some government clients required like data not be moved outside of the country. I don't know if schools do that, if have those requirements.
100% they do. Of course they do. Yes, they do.
Absolutely. And so, you just don't really know where that data is going, where it ends up, what server it ends up on, because for folks out there that don't know, folks like, Google or who owns a whole bunch of data centers, they'll just move data around without you ever noticing the back end. It could leave the country and come back and be subject to different, it could be subject to different examinations as a result of that. And so you guys
100%.
are not only 100% on site in the US, you're also, you provide visibility into the input and output of the systems, right? Now what kind of compliance laws are there around data privacy for school data?
So yeah, primarily if you're talking about in the US, you're talking about FERPA, right? You're talking about FERPA, probably SOC 2, things like that. Beyond that, there may be local regulations at the state level, or even the local level. There may be certain policies that a school system may prefer to employ. And so the key thing there is that as you would a best practice that you would use for deploying any service, that you must understand the security and compliance that requirements you have that apply to that service. And then you need to work with the vendor to make sure that those controls are properly in place. And then you also need to have an incident response plan. So when things do go wrong, which they will, you need to have a plan for how to respond to it. And this is where AI is really an atypical example of an enterprise application, because it does have that element of unpredictability to it, which you cannot completely get rid of. You can reduce the unpredictability of it, potentially bias and things like that. You can reduce it, but you can never fully eliminate it. So you just need to be ready for that. You need to educate the users. You need to say, okay, here's our acceptable use policy. Here's what you need to do as a user. If you see something that worries you, or if you feel that it could be harmful, here's the procedure whereby you should report this, just like anything else, right? And here is how we, as the organization or the school, are going to respond to that. We have a plan, and we, have that mapped out so that we know what we're going to do, as compared to saying, well, we know we've got to have it. We're going to give this thing to our teachers so they can do grading, and it's great, and their students should use it for research. But beyond that, it's kind of like the
Absolutely.
Wild West, right? So.
Yeah, man. No, 100%. And so how have you guys integrated from a use case perspective within school systems, and how is your system being used today, or what are some examples of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, sort of, we put it in the primarily the teacher and the student buckets, right? So, the big use for teachers is absolutely grading papers. So you have curriculum reference data sets. You may have specific re educational requirements data sets that are used as the reference that anchor the AI. And then, basically, again, you have a teacher that might have 30 papers to grade, and then they can then use one of our specialized fine-tuned assistants to say, okay, attach this paper and then provide the some subjective grade and some commentary on the quality of the paper, how well it complies with the curriculum objectives and things like that. And then that's a great use case for teachers in terms of reducing the overall workload and allowing them to sort of focus more on the quality of the content, and sort of have a baseline to start with. Lesson planning, of course, so they can do some lesson planning, say, hey, I have a few ideas. There's a few knowledge gaps that I have that I need to be able to teach about because they're requirements. So I have some knowledge gaps. Okay, how can I use my AI tools to fill in those knowledge gaps, and then create curriculum that works and teaching and content that works? There's the ability to create personalized lesson plans, right? So the teacher knows the kids, they know what they need. The problem is they have the teacher-student ratio is high. They cannot give all the kids personalized attention. However, they can talk with each kid or use AI to generate a couple of personalized lesson plans and objectives for the individual, which they can literally do in 30 seconds, right? So they can say, hey, I've got half an hour. I want to create some personalized learning plans with some actionable steps for the next week to 2 weeks for some students. Say, hey, I've just used AI because I know who you are. I know what you need. I've just used AI to create a little list of things I'd like you to do this week, down to saying, hey, I know you'd like to dedicate 3 hours to this. You're going to dedicate 1 hour every day, or sorry, half an hour every day, let's say. And then you're going to produce a little project at the end of it. And so the teachers know what to do. They know what to do. They know what's needed. And then the AI will help them produce what they intend to produce very quickly, and they can then decide and adjust it if they need to. But creating personalized learning plans is huge, and anyone would agree with that.
Absolutely. I mean, but that's also huge from a results perspective, right? I think that when you look at the results for a kid, having a personalized plan created for them would be great, especially that specifically focuses on their deficiencies. And also, I would assume that you can also take into account like their learning style as well.
Absolutely.
So you can give them not only give them a personalized plan from a content perspective, but from a methodology perspective as well. Is that correct?
100%. So yeah, we very recently we were asked to help a teacher who had two classes that were trying to get ready to pass a certain IT certification, and they said, you know, my guys are struggling. I really want to find a way to help improve their test scores, and we only have a week. We only have a week, right? Like, okay, what can we do in a week? So we went over there, and then we created some tutoring assistance based on guidance from the teacher and the curriculum and the objectives for the certification. We created some tutoring assistance. We had one of our actually our intern alumni from that school system go in there and act as a coach to assist the teacher in using the AI and the students on how to use it. They used the self-study assistance and the exam preparation assistance. And within 1 week, the test scores went up by about 25 to 30% in 1 week. One
Wow,
week.
that's incredible.
Very significant.
Small sample size, or was it a large, or
A
was it a
small
whole?
sample size, like a total of 30 students. 30 students. But the other key thing there is the morale, right? The student morale went up. That's sort of a, it's not a test score, but it's a engagement increase. The morale increased. Obviously, we had more kids pass the exam than before when they took the exam once, and we had a pretty low pass rate. The pass rate went up significantly, and they were engaged. And then we ran what's called sentiment analysis on all the logs from the user prompts, and we could tell from the logs the AI was helping us understand that the users were getting more engaged and asking better questions and being more curious and exploring different topics. And this was only in a week, and we only had 48 hours to build all the stuff. So we built it very quickly, and then we adjusted it along the way during the week. But just imagine if we were able to deliver that over a much longer period of time, working with the school and the teachers and the students, the benefits would be significant, very significant. And then, you know, to close that one out,
Especially if
and they
you
learn
go
prompt
ahead.
engineering, of course. Yeah,
Yeah,
and of
I was
course,
going to
the
say.
other big skill they learned during that time was prompt engineering and properly using AI to fill in their own knowledge gaps and to help them accomplish the certification, which at the end of the day, that's the measurable yardstick for that activity, right? Which, you know, that's
Yeah.
great.
Absolutely. No, that's fantastic. And I mean, I apologize for cutting you off, but I was thinking of, especially if you could start with the younger kids, right? At, you know, because I think, you know, if people are, it's obviously, it's like a, you know, you're, it's like a house you're building. You have to have a solid foundation, right? And if you can help give people a solid foundation as you build, you're able to introduce other things and other topics, and people are able to learn because they have that foundation. And if you're able to help, you know, give tools to folks, tools to kids to help them build a better foundation, I think that'll benefit society at large.
Well, by definition, I mean, by the time all these kids graduate high school and certainly college, they're going to go into an AI-powered workplace. And so, by integrating AI tools effectively and responsibly into the school systems, whether it's, you know, middle, high school, or higher ed, you're preparing them all for the workforce there. And you know, I like to pick up on this narrative about saying, well, the entry-level jobs are going away. Well, guess what? I've got some very sharp high schoolers that I've been coaching for 2 years, and I've been coaching them using AI tools on my platform, and they are now contractors for me. They are doing an outstanding job. They're not even in college yet.
Right.
And they're helping to configure platforms, build AI assistants, they're acting as AI coaches to tutor others. They're doing a great job. They're having a great time, and they're going to be leading the way going into college. And then they're going to be very, very employable when they graduate college, because they were able to say, "Look, we actually already started, interning with Tom for the last, the last 2 years of school. We were interns. We do a capstone project. We've got all these quantifiable deliverables. We've been doing public speaking. We've been coaching others, including adults, on how to use the stuff. We now have a very clear understanding of how to use all these things, and we can come to your place of work and solve problems for you on day one. On day one, we can start becoming productive, right?" And then you look at all of that, and then you also look at, the inverted population pyramid, how we've got the aging population problem. We've got a shortage of labor. We've actually got a shortage of labor. There's a huge demand for this. You now bring that AI education into the school system, you get these people ready, and then they're going to be very productive from the time they leave. Now, on the flip side there, of course, if you have people that do not do that, they will absolutely be at a big disadvantage. So we definitely need to close that gap,
Absolutely, absolutely, 100%. And what would you like school systems and more importantly, what would you like parents to know about how this is going to, about your system and how it can help people do a better job at teaching and learning?
There's a little bit to unpack there. I mean, I would say firstly, parents should be lobbying their school leadership and saying, "Please, can we get together and make a plan?" Right? The reality is that in the US we do not have a centralized AI regulation framework. The recent bill that was just in process right now of being going through Congress and what have you. There was provisions in there to strike the ability for states to make their own AI regulations. That's been struck from the bill. I personally, I would have preferred to have seen more of a national framework, if you will, or at least maybe a nationalized framework for AI regulation for education situations. Because the problem you've got now is that all these localities and all these different states and things are going to maybe try to make their own regulations, and there's very little consistency. And so, as an AI system builder, when I build a system now, I have to every time look at what are the applicable regulations. And so, there's a little bit of lobbying that has to go on from the parents with the school boards, and they need to collaborate and say, "Let's make a plan and figure out how we can get AI on there that will do the job." And then, parents, should ideally try to become involved in, collaborating with their kids and helping them understand how to use AI properly, and maybe going to some classes on understanding how to use it. Because again, if their kids don't develop those skills and they don't develop problem solving and critical thinking skills, they will absolutely be at a big disadvantage.
Huge.
And so there's I think those two things, lobbying the schools and working with the kids as well and the teachers to get them upskilled with AI capabilities, right?
Absolutely, man. And what Tom, what are the co like from a I know school budgets are a big it's a big touch point for a lot of people. What are some of the cost concerns around this for for schools and how do you help them overcome that?
So I think most public school systems really don't have the budget to pay, $10, $20 a month for each student to have access to AI tools. They just don't. You do the math there, it really adds up. And then a lot of families can't afford it either. So the good news is that the way we've built our platform with our own, open source software, our cost basis is very low. And we use a technology called Grok language processing units, Grok LPUs, over their API, which also runs at about a tenth of the cost and also is a lot greener than GPU-based inference for AI. So we've actually figured out how to bring those operational costs way down, and therefore we're able to pass on those very, very low price points to schools. Because for us as a business, we are more than happy, firstly, to support schools, of course. But then also, from a business perspective, we have a large number of users, like 1,000 or 20 or 30,000 users in these larger school systems. if they're all paying a small amount of money, multiply it by a large number, then it becomes a viable business proposition for us. And so I think we have cracked the code on how to deliver a very high quality private AI to school systems, and we're doing it today.
Okay. Yeah,
So.
and I assume that's like you're also probably not, from an LLM perspective, you're probably not using like a ChatGPT or a Gemini. Are you using one of an open, you said an open source one out of Europe, I think?
Well, no, the core platform that the open source software, we're working with a company in Europe to build the software. We deploy and host it in the
Got
US, right? So
it.
we
Okay.
do that. That we because we're using the Grok LPU technology from Jonathan Ross and the company over there on the West Coast. Not Elon Musk's Grok, not that one, right? Although that's a great product too, but we have figured out how to architect our system with very low cost inference. Which again is also quite green because it takes very very little power, and that's why it's so cheap. It's very efficient. The Grok technology also built, designed, and built in the USA, which is nice. So it's also built in the USA. So really, it's all those things that put together, plus having the ability to create the specialized assistance for the use cases that we have some special skills with. We can do this quickly and deploy quickly, like we talked about, 2 days. Improvement in test scores, 25 to 30% in a week. We can do this all day long, and we'd love to do it at on a wider level, so.
Absolutely. And I mean, my last question for you, Tom, is we both know that there's a lot of schools out there that would love to start experimenting with this. What advice would you give them? What advice would you give the folks that the school systems themselves that want to begin experimenting with AI, but they just don't know where to start?
Give us a call. Give us a call. Obviously, we're not going to be able to support every single school in the United States, or at least not right now, right? But the thing there is, try to, sort of, think about your learning objectives and your teaching modalities a little bit differently, right? So start thinking about thinking about how to use AI tools for personalized tutoring, developing problem-solving skills, whatever AI platform you use, figure out how it can be configured so it does not enable the sort of the copy and paste phenomenon, right? So this copy and paste, putting the thing in, getting the answer, copy and paste it, and calling it good, that is just completely useless, right? For all kinds of reasons, right? Try to figure out how you can get your AI systems to be configured so as to cultivate the curiosity, cultivate the problem-solving skills. By all means, provide information that's relevant to solving problems, and create learning projects, right? So create little research projects that kids can use the AI tools for to solve problems and to further their understanding as compared to just knowledge. So
Absolutely.
those are sort of some of the pro tips I would share with those folks,
Yeah, really appreciate it, man. Anything else you'd like to add? Any points you'd like to make that I didn't get to have the opportunity to ask you about?
You just have to lean in. You have to lean in, and it's no longer, you can no longer sort of allow this thing to move sideways, because the impact to your kids is going to be, if they don't have these skills, if they've not cultivated these skills, they will absolutely be at a significant disadvantage, to the point where an employer may say, you're just not employable. I just can't do it because I've got other people that can do what you're kid can do who has a degree, but they have just knowledge. They don't have any problem-solving skills, no extracurricular activities. They've done no projects. They've got no real knowledge. And the problem for me is, as an employer, they can't add value. They can't do the job, and I just don't have time.
Yeah, man.
So just be ready for that, and make sure that you ensure a different outcome for your kids.
Yeah, lean into it or get hit by a bus. It's your call,
Just
right?
lean into it. Otherwise, you're going to have to learn the hard way, and the hard way is not pretty. So,
Nope, not at all. Well, Tom, I really appreciate you coming on Robots and Red Tape, man. This has been a really fun conversation
oh,
and
yeah.
informative on a very, very important topic that affects a lot of people in this country. And love the work you're doing, man. Really appreciate it,
Of
and
course.
love that you're, really working hard to empower students and teachers to lean into this new tech and understand how it can benefit folks and That's beautiful, brother. I love it. Really appreciate you, man.
Yep, absolutely. And just on the last note there too, we're not only doing this in the US, we're also doing, we've got a pilot starting in Nairobi, Kenya right now. We've already got it deployed in New Zealand as well. Some of my old expat friends there and such. But I will tell you that the use cases across the world are pretty much the same. It's what we talked about earlier. So we just need to lean in. And because we don't have this centralized approach like the guys in China have, so China has a very centralized government approach, education approach. We don't have that. So we just kind of need to do this at the grassroots level. That's just the way it is, you know. So there we go.
Absolutely. Really appreciate it. Tom's LinkedIn is going to be in the description below. Also, check out there'll be a link to his website as well. I'm sure if this topic interests you, he'd love for you to reach out and know he'd be happy to chat with folks. And everybody, really appreciate it. Tom, thank you so much. Thank you for listening to Robots and Red Tape, everybody. As always, I hope you're having a wonderful day.